Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the 99% podcast. I'm Lucien Waugh-Daly.
And I'm Michael McAndrew.
How are you, Michael?
Good, we're back.
We're back. This is an interesting day. We're here in the studios of Flirt FM, NUI Galway.
Post-US election.
I'm running the desk today for the recording, so we're going to see how terrible this sounds.
Yeah.
We did a short mini episode the other day discussing our initial reactions to the victory of Donald J. Trump. And
yeah, you can.
Now we're going to
check that out. Now,
relatively more in-depth conversation about that.
Yeah,
result. And there's only one way to start a discussion about a triumph of the right in the U.S. election. That is by playing "Answer to No One" by Colt Ford. The song has taken on like darker subtext now that this guy's party has actually won the election, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were kind of laughing at it before, but yeah, it's kind of serious.
It's still a great song.
It is.
And Donald Trump has never had any connection to the song. Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel. All right. Don't even know why I'm playing it. So, this song was Rick Perry's song. Rick Perry was one of all those Republicans who contested Donald Trump for the nomination of the Republican Party. They all lost. We've talked about them before. Who was your favorite?
My favorite.
Yeah, we're doing a bit of a recap of the entire election today. Who was your favorite Republican? Who would you have been most enthusiastic voting for in that primary?
From a Republican standpoint?
Yeah, against Donald. Who would you have, if you had been a Republican voting in that primary, who would you have voted for?
Okay. Well, I mean, Jeb was obviously the most... He was probably...
He was the most moderate.
Most moderate,
but,
yes.
Well, he wasn't. He was the most moderate of the legitimate candidates. But
of the legitimate candidates, yes.
George Pataki.
Yes, okay.
John Kasich, to some extent. And Lindsey Graham would all, I'd say, be slightly more moderate. But I wouldn't have thought of that till just now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm not sure who I would have voted for. I would have been happy to see Jeb Bush as the nominee.
I would too.
And I would be in such a
yet another
mood.
Bush, but still.
I would be in a much better mood right now if Jeb Bush was the president-elect.
Yeah.
Still would have supported Hillary, but not as with as much passionate hatred of the opponent, I'd say.
Mm.
Jeb, Kasich, I could have lived with. I think Kasich, definitely. More so even than Jeb, does seem like a legitimately reasonable human being.
Yeah.
One of which we do not have as our champion now.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just so strange how this, starting last year, how Trump just... How have we got to this point now where Donald Trump is the president-elect of the U.S., right?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
It's a clear sign of a man who... really, really knows how to
sell something
to an audience,
which he's been doing for years, and now he's done the ultimate sale. He sold himself to the entire public.
Yeah,
that's the hardest sales job ever is in an election, because really it's not just a specific demographic, everyone can vote.
And this is a man who won without the popular vote.
So he didn't. Similar, the majority of Americans voted against Donald Trump, firstly,
yeah.
And a larger number of people voted for Hillary Clinton than voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah. So,
I don't know, but we've got a few things we're gonna talk about. So yesterday, Trump went to visit President Obama at the White House. They had a meeting. It was, according to Trump, scheduled to go on for 15 minutes, and it ended up going on for an hour and a half. They said Trump said they talked about some things that are, what word did he use? Magnificent? Or some things that are not so great. And
yeah, he said, yeah, it was something like, some things are good, some things are not good.
He looks forward to using President Obama as counsel when he gets into the job.
Yeah.
Now, Trump, of course, the probably one of the most vigorous
opponents of Obama's legitimacy as a president for years claimed that Obama was born outside the United States, until very recently said that Obama's birth certificate was fraudulent. And now Obama has to invite him into his home. It really puts Obama in a really peculiar situation.
He has to put his own views, his own opinions, and all of that horrible stuff that Donald Trump has said about him aside for the people of the United States.
In recent memory, there is no similar situation. Like when Bush handed over to Obama, that wasn't. Obama had never said things about Bush to the extent that, that Trump has said about Obama. Just hasn't. It's a new level of hatred.
I think it is. I don't think there has ever been a candidate who has won having said what Donald Trump has said
about the incumbent or about anyone else or about his opponent.
Yes.
Because he's frankly just lied constantly and lied in really dangerous ways, especially about Obama before and during his presidential campaign. But so the Dow Jones has responded to the election of Trump. So at first, when the news came in that Trump had been elected, the Dow was reportedly going to drop to 9/11 numbers.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it here now, November 8th, 10 a.m. So at about 4 p.m. on November 8th, the Dow dropped slightly. Then it went up again by 10 a.m. the next day. And by 12 p.m. on Wednesday, it was at a extremely... It was up a good bit more. And then by 10 a.m. on Thursday, it peaked. It had a peak for the last month, really. So I think this is not none of the positive aspect of that is not Trump's doing. It is, I think, Hillary and Obama's dedication and declaration of dedication to a peaceful transfer of power. The fact that they have said that they are prioritizing a stable manner in which they're going to hand over the White House to Trump, and frankly, that the shareholders and the investors on Wall Street were given no real reason to panic immediately about the impact of this election, because, and I think that Hillary and Obama did huge work in actually saving the market from collapsing.
Yeah.
And I think Trump himself should thank them for that, because they really did him a favor. They've been doing him a lot of favors the last couple of days, which in many ways I find quite irritating, because I don't think his presidency should be really treated as legitimate by them, because he lied so much and he's broken the law and he has clearly not paid any tax and he should, in theory, not be eligible to run. But at the same time, he did win a Democratic election. Now, I don't think the argument is whether or not he did, because was it Democratic when people were when the KKK and associated groups were threatening to intimidate voters at polling stations, to intimidate black voters, to prevent minority groups from voting? Was that a Democratic election that just occurred? Truly Democratic, because really the amount of bullying that went on from Trump, from his campaign, from people who are directly and indirectly associated with his campaign, the amount of bullying that went on, it must have affected the turnout in a lot of areas, and it must have resulted in some ways in the margin by which he won being expanded upon.
Yeah, it was Democratic. And that is because people still had the choice.
Yeah. But when they're being threatened, there was an extra obstacle put in the way of people voting for Hillary Clinton, when the people were being threatened by the Ku Klux Klan. That's a level of democracy being removed. That's one of the bricks being taken away.
Yeah.
It's obviously a Democratic result. No one's going to shout rigged like he would have done.
No.
However, it certainly was not the fairest of elections. I think the way that the media treated the two candidates in terms of giving fair airtime in the general election
was questionable. How much of the vote do you think... How much are the Ku Klux Klan responsible for the change in the vote?
There's no way to know. Probably not enough to change the result.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, but I just don't think that... I think that Hillary and Obama should maybe be more cynical in their attitudes to Trump's election. They're being very, very... they're treating him with a lot of...
Yeah, but they're doing that because they realize that...
I guess they want to set.
There's nothing that they can do. And if you immediately approach him with a hostile
attitude, he's a character who will respond very negatively to that. And also, they want to set a precedent whereby in 4 years or in 8 years, let's hope it's 4 years, when he is replaced in office, there will be a he will be obliged by precedent to do exactly what they are doing now in handing over the White House to whoever defeats him in the election, or whoever follows on from him if he gets the 8 years. Now, the Irish government have responded, and before we discuss that more, I'm going to play the speech by Senator Aidan O'Riordan yesterday. I think that he is one. I agree with every word he says in the speech, and I was heartened to see I was heartened to see a senior political figure in this country speak so say such spot on things about the Irish response.
Go Margaret Cahir, Edmund Burke once said that the only way evil can prosper is for good men to do nothing. America has just elected a fascist, and the best thing that good people in Ireland can do is to ring him up and ask him if it's okay to still bring the shamrock on St. Patrick's Day. I'm embarrassed by the reaction of the Irish government to what's happened in America. I can't believe the reaction from an Taoiseach and from the government. And I don't use the word fascist lightly. What else would you call somebody who threatens to imprison his political opponents? What else would you call somebody who threatens to not allow people of a certain religious faith into their country? What would you say, or how would you describe somebody who is threatening to deport 10 million people? What would you say about somebody who says that the media is rigged, judiciary is rigged, the political system is rigged, and then he wins an election, and the best we can come out with is a phone call to say, is it still okay to bring the shamrock? I'm appalled that a member of this House, a female member of this House, went on social media to congratulate this man. Can I just refer this House and Cathaoirleach and the Leader of the House to the statement from Angela Merkel? Germany and America are connected by values of democracy, freedom and respect for the law and dignity of man, independent of origin, skin colour, religion, gender, sexual orientation or political views. I offer the next President of the United States close cooperation on the basis of these values. Can the government not understand what's happening? We are at an ugly international crossroads. What's happening in Britain is appalling. What's happening across Europe is appalling. It has echoes from the 1930s. And America, the most powerful country in the world, has just elected a fascist. And the best we can come out with from government spokesperson is, well, we have to talk about foreign direct investment. We have to be conscious of American investments in Ireland. There are 50,000 Irish people illegal in America who I'm quite sure are fearful of their futures. When are we going to have the moral courage to speak in terms other than economy all the time and to realise what is happening? And if the Taoiseach of this country cannot stand as an Irishman at the crossroads of this ugly venture that the international political system is facing into and call it for what it is, then we are doing nothing. I am frightened. I am absolutely frightened for what's happening to this world and what's happening to our inability to stand up against it. I want to congratulate Colm Eastwood from the SDLP, who has said that he won't participate in the charade in St. Patrick's Day. A clear challenge to other political leaders in this country who may be more interested in their fundraising capacity in America so as not to insult potential American dollars that could come into their political coffers here in Ireland. I want to ask you, Leader, to ask the Minister for Foreign Affairs into this House and to ask him how we are supposed to deal with this monster who's just been elected President of America, because I don't think any of us in years to come should look back at this period and not say that we did everything in our power to call out for what it is.
Thank you.
So, main points you made there is that our government are being way too friendly to Trump, and are prioritizing American economic connections with Ireland over showing some decency and showing some showing and, you know, protesting in some way, or in some way showing some integrity in the face of having to wish this man congratulations.
Yeah.
Angela Merkel's statement, I think, was very well phrased in that she said, you know, yeah, we acknowledge your victory and we are willing to work with you cooperatively if you cooperate with the values that our country respects. And I think Enda Kenny's statement should have been closer to that. And I think that I think everything that the senator said was right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, as he said, should be addressing this more firmly at the moment. So another response to this election. Sure, why would we bother responding ourselves when so many more eloquent people have written eloquent responses? So Aaron Sorkin, who's one of my favorite people, wrote a letter to his wife and to his daughter. Now, it's pretty long. So I'll read you the last few paragraphs. Or do you want to read it, Michael?
No, go ahead.
Okay. America didn't stop being America last night, and we didn't stop being Americans. And here's the thing about Americans. Our darkest days have always been followed by our finest hours. I know my predictions have let you down in the past, but personally, I don't think this guy can make it a year without committing an impeachable crime. If he does manage to be a douche nozzle without breaking the law for 4 years, we'll make it through those 4 years. And 3 years from now, we'll fight like hell for our candidate, and we'll win and they'll lose, and this time they'll lose for good. It'll be your first vote. This is to his daughter. The battle isn't over, it's just begun. Grandpa fought in World War II, and when he came home, this country handed him an opportunity to make a great life for his family. I will not hand his granddaughter a country shaped by hateful and stupid men. Your tears last night woke me up, and I'll never go to sleep on you again. So this is one of these responses, which highlights basically, which is what even our guest Shane Barbera said on a previous episode, that the election of Trump would launch a revolution and a huge amount of passion on the left of American politics that would then lead to a more monumental shift than anything that could have been the result of a Hillary Clinton presidency would have been.
Yeah.
Now this is an optimistic way of looking at the result of what's happened, because of course that's all we can do.
Yeah,
now.
we do have to talk about, like, okay, well, now that Trump is president, like,
what are the good things about it?
Well. So okay. Well,
people on the left are going to be more—they're going to be more energized in 4 years, right?
Yeah,
and they're going to elect somebody, hopefully, more on the Senator Sanders side of the party, somebody whose values are actually legitimately progressive, and somebody who can, in an extremely short and efficient amount of time, undo the horrors that are going to be committed, we assume, by the 45th president. There's also, I think, this is kind of a shaky stance, but that maybe the fact that, and this is would have happened even if Clinton had won, but the fact that Trump was involved in this election, the fact that he was behaving on such a base level, and the rhetoric of this election, because it was not based on policy, it was based on personality and on this ridiculous bullying. Because of that, it became a much more accessible election for people, where people were actually tuning in to what was being said on both sides. They were hearing Trump saying these bigoted, ignorant things, and they were saying Clinton saying things which were, while more complex, things that they maybe wouldn't have listened to Obama actually explaining 4 years earlier, but they might have actually listened to them. And as a result, people might become more invested in the political process because it's been brought down a level to something that can be understood at face value and at a base level. And that maybe not a good thing.
I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm just thinking it's a thing that can be thrown out there.
Yeah. So well, if maybe Trump got more people that wouldn't have previously voted to vote.
But there was a good reason why they didn't vote. We don't want those
people
voting.
There was a good reason that they didn't vote, and that was that they were completely uneducated. Yeah. And I would rather somebody not vote than ignorantly vote.
Yes, yes. No, so would I, yeah.
So, yeah, I disagree. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Do you want to go through...
The heroes and villains of the election now.
The heroes and villains of the election.
Right, this is a bit of a lighter one.
By the way, this is Lucian's. These are Lucian's heroes and villains of the election.
Oh, yes, so you can chime in.
So I'll chime in.
And you can add some new people.
Yeah.
So this list was made before. I made this list before the before election day. So this list is very pro-Clinton, very anti... Well, not necessarily pro-Clinton, but very pro-Democrat, very anti-Trump. And, all the people who I list as villains on this list, they won. So
yeah,
what can we say?
Yeah,
we're gonna go through the heroes first. These are the people who I thought did great work this year and made the election a bit better for everybody. The socialist,
mm-hmm.
Senator Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
He may not be moving into the White House in January, but nobody won the American public's hearts this election season, quite like Bernie Sanders. The gruff Vermont septuagenarian. Now, that is a hard word to spell.
Septuagenarian.
Septuagenarian. It's like an iguana.
Okay.
Who won 23 of 57 contests against Hillary in the Democratic primaries, an extraordinary feat for a candidate without a super PAC or half of Clinton's name recognition. Upon conceding to Clinton, Sanders impacted hugely on the Democratic election platform and on attitudes to socialists and Democratic socialists in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, what Bernie really did was he provided a competition for Hillary,
yeah,
and got her to basically...
He made her a much better candidate.
Hillary,
who ran against Trump on Tuesday, was a significantly...
Definitely.
Better candidate than she would have been if she'd won that nomination uncontested, where she could have been as moderate as she wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
especially in the face of Trump's extremism.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all in agreement. I think Bernie is the hero of this election. I think he's the one that people are going to look back fondly on, I think far more so than Hillary. But maybe that's not her fault. That's because he didn't get the chance to lose.
And for
Donald
a man
Trump.
who didn't become the final candidate,
yeah.
he has had such an incredible amount of influence.
And if... Question is, if Bernie had run against Trump and had lost,
I know,
would people feel more positively towards him than they do now towards Clinton?
I wonder. No.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then next up, we have the fighter, Michelle Obama. She did fantastic work campaigning for Hillary. I think she was the candidate that many people would have liked to see the Democratic Party nominate this time.
Yeah, everybody loves Michelle Obama.
And I think that Michelle Obama, I think, would have a genuinely good shot if she chose to, which I don't think she will. I think she'd have a fantastic shot in 2020.
I don't think she'd do 2020.
Someone needs to.
Somebody needs to. I'm not sure she's the person, though, yeah. because of her. I mean, she has great experience. In the White House, but she hasn't held office. But the experience...
Donald Trump.
Yes, I understand.
You see, having held office is no longer relevant.
I know that, yes.
President Trump, that's now... off. She has way more experience than Trump does.
Yes.
She's a lawyer, and she spent 4 years in the... 8 years in the White House.
Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure 2020
yeah.
is the best election for her to
But in terms
go
of people who would have the best chance of defeating Trump, she'd...
There's not many people who do
better than Michelle.
Yes, no, you're right.
Not many Democrats who people are aware of and like as much as Michelle.
Yes, definitely.
So next on the list is Kazir Khan.
Oh, yes.
I think Kazir Khan was, once again, somebody who would have been a better candidate than Hillary Clinton.
Mm.
I think I'm going to play this ad, actually, because we never got the chance to play it on the show. And I think this ad is really, really powerful. It's a one-minute ad that Hillary released a few weeks ago, an anti-Trump ad. And I think it's a really, really, really good ad. We haven't played it yet.
In 2004, my son was stationed in Iraq. He saw a suicide bomber approaching his camp. My son moved forward to stop the bomber when the bomb exploded. He saved everyone in his unit. Only one American soldier died. My son was Captain Humayun Khan. He was 27 years old, and he was a Muslim American. I want to ask Mr. Trump, would my son have a place in your America?
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
I think watching that ad now after Trump's won makes it even worse. Kazir Khan is really something. He's such a symbol of tolerance and of decency and of integrity.
Yeah,
he is the complete antithesis of Donald Trump's character. He is somebody who has attacked Donald Trump in a way that is dignified and is not particularly... Like, he's done it in such a dignified way. And it really shows Donald Trump how you campaign against somebody that you disagree with and how you stand up for yourself. And I hope Kazir Khan sticks around, and I hope that we see him again in the future standing up against Trump's policies, because he really is great. And he was really the face of the Muslim American reaction to Trump's Islamophobia and his attitudes towards that community. Next up, we got Larry Sanders. This is Bernie's brother, who made the speech at the Democratic Convention, which he called out Bernie's parents. He said they'd be proud of their son. I think there wasn't a Bernie supporter in the land who didn't shed a tear at this moment. And I think it was, as I called it here, it was sincere, personal, and reminded us all how important public service is when it's done right. It was like a very unique moment of humanity in an election that was at times embarrassingly inhuman. Next up, the NPR Politics Podcast team. We know the 99% was your source for news, but when we weren't around for weeks on end, the NPR crew...
That's where I got my all my news
me
from.
Too. They did a great job, and we recommend that podcast. It's really a good podcast, NPR Politics. Next up, we got my guys, the voices of the left. I put on this list. I tried to pick three people, so I picked.
Okay.
I picked Bill Maher, Michael Moore, and John Oliver. Now I don't watch John Oliver's show anymore, but I realized he was important in bringing the same message that Bill and Michael did, but to a younger and more, I think, internet-based audience.
Yeah.
I think he's a star of the internet. These two guys are television stars in many ways. Well, Michael Moore's a film star, Bill Maher's a TV star. I think John Oliver is their internet counterpart. I know you're a bigger fan of John Oliver than of the other two. But they all did great work the last few weeks, unsuccessfully, to try and get Clinton elected. They were very rational in jumping from, well, at least Bill and Michael jumped very rationally from the Bernie train onto the Hillary train when they realized that was literally the only reasonable option in this election. And
I think their job was already done, though.
Yeah.
So whereas, you know, I mean, it was clear that, you know, the influence of the younger generation was not great enough.
Yeah.
So, but throughout the campaign, they've done great work.
Yeah.
They've basically
I said they demonstrated the power of comedy and broadcasting honest ideas in an accessible way.
Yeah, and they've made young people interested and engaged in politics where they may not have necessarily been before.
Yeah. Time now for the villains. This is the team that won. This team won the election. It's horrible to have to say it, but they did.
Yeah.
They all played a part. Well, most of these people did. Ted Cruz, the rat, first off. This is a man who really has just... Donald Trump said that Ted Cruz's wife was disgusting. He said Ted Cruz's father killed JFK, and Ted Cruz bounced back and endorsed Donald Trump wholeheartedly and went and made speeches for him. This is a man with no integrity, a laughably weak character, a power-hungry science skeptic. He could have...
Not even from America.
He's not even from America. He's a Cuban-Canadian. He was born in Canada. I think that Ted Cruz would have been a worse president than Donald Trump. We'll have to see now, but I think I would be more scared right now if Ted Cruz was president, almost. I'm not sure. I think I might be. I think Trump was a preferable option.
I think...
Would you agree?
Trump is a preferable option to Ted Cruz?
Yeah, I think he is.
I think... No.
No?
No.
I think Ted Cruz is more of a... is less predictable. I think Ted Cruz is more of a... Well, maybe not less predictable.
But he's less of a spine.
He's more extreme.
Even less.
He's just a disgusting person who I hate looking at so much. But so is Donald Trump. It's hard to decide.
Oh, well, because you hate looking at them, they must be terrible.
No, I mean, I hate listening to their policies.
But
looking at them.
Okay, yeah.
Next up, we have the meddler, Nigel Farage.
Yeah, he had absolutely no right to
interfere in this election whatsoever. He won Brexit. He's a disgusting man. He helped Trump sell his message of extreme xenophobia and immigrant panic to the public. Farage and fellow outspoken Brit Piers Morgan, who also supported Trump, should really mind their own business. Next up, we've got Paul Ryan, who I called the coward. When it became clear that Rubio and Bush weren't up to the job, Paul Ryan was offered a door to launch a last-minute campaign to snatch Trump, to snatch the nomination at July's convention. I think Paul Ryan could have beaten Trump at the convention. He didn't. Later, he was given ample opportunity to disavow Trump and lead a party revolt. He did not. Even the pussy tape came out, he kind of stepped back from supporting Trump, but he still did. He still voted for Trump. And I think Paul Ryan had a responsibility and had an opportunity to stop this, and he did nothing. And I think that this reflects very, very poorly on Paul Ryan's character. Next up, and this is one person here who probably didn't vote for Trump, but I think is still largely responsible for what's happened in many ways. We talked just there about how Maher and Moore and Oliver influenced the younger voter in in being involved in politics and such. And here's somebody who influenced the younger voter, I feel, maybe a lot of them, to vote for Donald Trump or stay at home. That's Jimmy Fallon, who I call the sycophant. He did the worst thing imaginable. He humanized a monster, playing silly games and ruffling Trump's hair. Fallon was a disgrace to comedians and the embodiment of a pop cultural sellout. When Fallon brought Trump on his show, he turned him into a likable and entertaining character, which Trump is not. He is not either any of those things. And
I don't think so.
No?
I disagree.
Okay.
I think the purpose of Jimmy, if anything, the thing with Jimmy Fallon's show is that it's not really very political at all.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, he,
none of
Trump
his,
came.
None of the other late night talk show hosts, not Colbert, not Seth Meyers, invited Trump onto their show once he won the nomination.
Colbert is a completely different presenter
Fine.
To Jimmy
Seth
Fallon.
Meyers is not, though. He's on after Jimmy Fallon. He was his replacement on late night. He's a very similar style, but he said, Trump is banned from my show. He makes me sick. He can't say these things about women and still be allowed to come on my show and sell his brand. And I think Fallon and his team should have said the exact same thing. And NBC should have said it. As a network that are accused so often of being liberally biased, they should have made a decision on this hand that it was worth being called biased to not allow Trump to come on. Let him on the news all he wants. Let him on political programs.
Well, that was their
keep him away from a comedy show.
That was their decision, but I don't think you can blame Jimmy Fallon for...
No, of course not. But he's on this list because I feel he was part of this team. He pandered and he was a sycophant, and that hurts. And that has an effect. All right, next up. Gary Johnson, who I call the idiot. Though at first seeming like a tolerable alternative to Trump's hate and Clinton's dishonesty, the pro-weed, anti-war candidate ultimately emerged as a blabbering fool with no knowledge of foreign policy and horrendous positions on welfare and guns. Johnson, if everyone who voted for Johnson and Stein in California, in Florida, had voted for Hillary, Hillary would have won that state and would have won the election. Of course, there is a point to be made that many, if not most, of Johnson's supporters were never, ever going to vote for Hillary Clinton to begin with. And in fact, probably just took votes away from Trump.
Yes.
I just feel betrayed by Gary Johnson because I liked him for quite some time. I had some respect for him. And then I realized what an absolute idiot he was.
Although in some cases, I kind of feel like he did split the vote a little bit from Hillary.
Yeah.
I can't think of an example off the top of my head.
I think Jill Stein did.
Jill Stein
did.
But Jill Stein ended up having such a tiny portion. I think people realized that she was not a...
Yeah,
the kind of people who would vote for her would be the kind of... Who would consider voting for her would be the kind of people who would be intelligent enough
to make the rational decision to vote for Trump. To vote for Hillary.
To vote for Hillary Clinton and realize that maybe she's not the type of candidate that you might think.
Next up. We have the snake, Governor Mike Pence. Maintaining his tone of civility throughout the campaign, he did the impossible. He gave the Trump machine legitimacy and consistency, abandoned all his personal integrity, standing behind a monster. And Mike Pence, I think, is going to be pulling a lot of the strings in this administration.
I think so, too. I think his vice presidency will be more comparable to Dick Cheney's than...
He's going to be a matador, not a doormat.
Probably, yes. And, I mean, that does seem a bit worrying.
The thing is, well, Mike Pence is... He's awful, but he's also not stupid. He's not insane, and he has far more understanding of foreign policy than Donald Trump does.
Yeah.
And I think if Mike Pence is the one responsible... If Mike Pence has a say in what wars are started, what deals are made, and what countries are targeted with nuclear weapons, I think America's in slightly safer hands than if Trump is the only one making this decision. Because genuinely, I mean, he has no experience. Pence has worked in government.
And based on Donald Trump's past kind of his attitude towards what he would allow his VPs do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think Donald Trump has very much interest at all in running
the
day-to-day.
He offered John Kasich a role as head of foreign and domestic policy.
Which is everything.
That's everything except for space
except
and the
space,
sea.
Yeah.
And finally on my list, as much as we wanted Hillary to win the election come Tuesday, we must not forget that she did cheat in the Democratic primary. She did cheat. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz helped her cheat.
Yeah.
And I would, in fact, put more scorn onto Debbie Wasserman Schultz's shoulders than onto Hillary's.
Why?
Hillary was the candidate. Hillary wanted to win. I think a person in a job of neutrality who helps somebody cheat is actually worse than a contestant who cheats. I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz was being paid to be neutral, and she did not do her job.
Hillary She's Clinton, a friend of Hillary, Clinton,
Hillary Clinton's
though,
job. So yeah, yeah. No, no. Hillary is hugely responsible for this. But Hillary's job was Hillary's personal role was to win this nomination. Debbie Wasserman Schultz's job was to remain neutral. Hillary did her job. She did it in a horrendous way, but she did it. Debbie Wasserman Schultz did not do her job. Debbie Wasserman Schultz manipulated the party's internal system to deny Sanders any real chance. They gave Clinton questions in advance of the Flint debate. They helped her. They put the debates on Saturday nights to make sure they got very low viewership so people wouldn't be exposed to Bernie's policies as much. And they, you can look at the emails on WikiLeaks of what was going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, where she was trying to come up with the most horrible ways to try and disavow Bernie Sanders. It's horrendous.
But ultimately, it's nothing. I mean, she didn't, like this, that kind of thing wouldn't even happen here because you don't get the chance.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not, you know.
So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, hopefully we don't have to see her ever again. She's a horrible individual. And I think, as many people have said in recent days, the Democratic Party that runs against Trump in 2020 needs to be as far from the one that Debbie Wasserman Schultz ran as it can possibly be. So those are my heroes and villains of the election. Who else would you put on those lists?
I think you pretty much...
I left Hillary and Trump off, intentionally.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with some of them.
With Jimmy Fallon.
Just pretty much Jimmy Fallon, yeah.
Is there anyone else you'd put on the heroes list?
On the heroes list.
Anyone else who you think contributed in a positive way to the last year? Because we've been watching a lot of crap from this campaign. I think those people were the people who I did not hate during this campaign.
Yeah.
I think Bill Clinton did an okay job.
I don't know.
Joe Biden did a good job.
He did.
And President Obama also. I didn't leave either of them on this, but they both campaigned better
for Obama Hillary. Obama did some serious...
Obama and Biden both campaigned for Hillary far better than she did for herself.
Definitely.
And I think if she'd
That's
won,
because they're
she'd
just,
have them to thank.
It tells you that they're so much better speakers than her.
I think America right now has the best president and vice president possibly that it's ever had and that it ever will have again. I cannot express how disappointed I am that President Obama is going to be leaving in 2 months. I think he's no matter if you agree with all his policies, I think he's a great guy.
So do you want to just quickly get the final results in? Because I don't think we actually talked about final results.
We read out every state, but we didn't have the specifics.
Yes. So
Minnesota still didn't call.
So the final, if we look at the electoral colleges, Trump had 306 electoral votes, and Clinton had 232. So he had well over 270.
He did.
Despite not winning the popular vote.
Yeah,
Clinton
it's
had 47.
How he could have such a landslide there despite not winning. That's weird.
Yeah, there was 47.7% for Clinton in the popular vote and 47.4% for Trump. 4.8% were for other candidates.
That includes write-ins, I assume.
Write-ins as well, yes. The key states in the election were probably would say Ohio, Florida, Virginia, and North Carolina.
Yeah. Michigan.
And Michigan, of course. Michigan is where it closed.
Yeah.
If we look at kind of what happened, Ohio was a state that Trump flipped from Obama.
Yeah.
In 2012 and 2008, they both voted for Obama.
Yeah.
This time around, Trump did very well. He got 52.1%, and Hillary Clinton got 43.5%. So he really did very well there. Michigan was, of course, the deciding state, and it was incredibly close.
Yeah.
He got 47.6%, and Clinton got 47.3%.
Where did that other 5-6% go? Go to Johnson.
Into other candidates.
Go
now,
to Johnson?
It
or was it people writing in Bernie? Like the write-in votes will be released at some point, I think. So we'll know how many people have voted for Vermin Supreme.
I'm pretty sure in Michigan there was about 2%.
Okay. Because I really want to know how many people voted for Vermin Supreme, how many people voted for D's Nuts, how many people voted for Dat Boy, how many people voted for Harambe, and how many people wrote in Bernie Sanders as their candidate, which I think is the most idiotic thing you could possibly do.
Yeah.
If you were so fundamentally opposed to Hillary Clinton and what she stands for that you couldn't vote for her, I'd rather you vote for Jill Stein than vote for Bernie Sanders. he wasn't eligible to run.
Yeah,
writing in a vote for him is literally throwing a vote in the bin. He couldn't possibly. If every person in America had written in Bernie Sanders, he wouldn't have won because he was ineligible. So that's just
possibly idiocy. the biggest swings were Pennsylvania.
Yes,
with he got a 48.8%, and Clinton got 47.6%. But Florida was a huge surprise for me.
Yeah.
You know, I actually thought that Clinton had it in the can, and he won it with 49.1%, and Clinton at 47.8% in the end.
Yeah,
these are all states that Trump swung from Obama: Iowa, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin,
real blue collar places. These are working class white people who would have voted Democrat probably their entire lives, or at least when they had voted. And now, there are large populations in those states where people never voted at all.
Yeah.
And now they've come out in support of a candidate who claims that he's going to bring back jobs from China and help get them back to work. And I think we can all say that that's probably not going to happen under President Trump. We want to wrap it up?
We'll wrap it up for today.
So there's not many positive things we can say about the current situation.
I mean, we can only look towards
the future.
Yes, and we'll be closely analyzing Trump's first 100 days.
Good thing is we have freedom of press. Everyone can say whatever they want about Donald Trump, even when he's president. We're going to be back in January, maybe before then, but we'll be here in January. We're going to do a special episode, I think, about Obama's legacy before he leaves office, and then we'll be covering the first 100 days of Trump's presidency in some form.
Absolutely.
Hasn't been a very fun election, to be honest. It's been kind of awful. But it has provided hours of entertainment.
It has indeed.
And 17 episodes.
17 episodes of 99%.
Thanks for tuning in to us throughout this American election. You can visit 99pshow.com, twitter.com/99pshow, facebook.com/99pshow. You can follow McAndrew Tweets. I am Revolutionary. Thanks to our executive producer, Shane Kelly. And our executive producer, Killian Byrd. 2020, guys.
We'll see you then.
Has the Fine Gael minority government collapsed yet?
No.
Adios. I can't say adios amigos because Mexicans are banned from America now. Goodbye, friends.